Starscream here, and I am Lord and Master of all things Transformers. Don't tell Megatron.
Hello and welcome to All Things Transformers version 2.0. I am one of your hosts, Steve Megatron Phillips, and joining me in this is...
DFGO and Mike.
And Michael Pecan Court Wilson.
In this latest ATTF interview, we are welcoming the voice of Wolverine, Spike, Tom, Heatwave, and of course Starscream. And everything else, it's Mr. Steve Bloom.
What's up?
Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on.
Before we get started, can you give us the scoop on what's going on in the world of Steve Bloom? Any upcoming updates that you can reveal or tell us about?
Oh, man. There's so much happening right now. We're continuing on with Transformers Prime. That's probably biggest news.
Awesome show.
Which I love. I love working on that show. I love everybody on that show. Transformers Rescue Bots is still going strong. And Toonami is back, for those of you who love anime, after 4 years off the air. That's a huge deal in my life. So every Saturday night, we're back on the air, and we're taking over Adult Swim from midnight to 3 a.m.
Which is a great thing.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's really fun to be part of that again, and we're kind of rebuilding the show from the ground up. And just a ton of projects. Legend of Korra just finished showing their first season, and it was a huge success. I'm on the regular show all over the place. Ultimate Spider-Man, Guild Wars 2 is either just coming out or has come out. Warcraft. There's a new project called Infex that I'm working on. It's a motion comic with PCB Productions. It's fully interactive with leads to outside websites. Really, really cool project. So that's available for iPad 2 and 3.
Awesome.
Other than that, I have nothing going on.
Sounds like you keep pretty busy.
Pretty darn busy, thank God.
Well, he has to. I mean, you know, he has to keep up with, you know, Megatron schemes.
Yes.
You have to stay one step behind. I mean, in front of Megatron, yes.
For those that don't know, where did you grow up?
I was born in Santa Monica, California. I grew up in West LA, and I'm still a Southern California boy. I never moved out. I lived in Bakersfield for 1 year, if that counts, if any of you know where that is. But it really doesn't count in my time continuum.
For a second there, I thought you were going to say Burbank.
I'm in Burbank every day, but I haven't officially lived there. So, yeah.
Did you always want to be an actor or a voice actor?
No, neither, actually. I never had any aspirations of that, nor did I think I had any talent for that. I was actually starting out as a musician, and not great at that either. I was a sideman in a R&B band, and I used to play coffee houses by myself with an acoustic guitar. And I kind of sucked, but I really loved doing it. And then I got a job at a film company, low-budget sci-fi film company called Empire Entertainment. We made movies like Reanimator and Ghoulies, stuff like that, eventually the Puppet Master movies. And I worked my way up in that company to head of marketing. And I actually had a big office and everything and hated every minute of the corporate life. So I sort of fell into voice acting by accident in the anime world and just kept doing it.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, tell us the story of behind your Guinness World Record.
That was a weird thing. I don't keep track of my career, and I'm really surprised that some people care enough to do that. And I guess the guys at Guinness, there's a guy named Gaz Deaves, who contacted my agent, I believe, and they had just paid attention to my IMDb and did a rough count on it. And it seemed like I had more credits than most people in the industry for that. So they asked my agent if she could confirm my credits that I would be awarded the most prolific voice actor in video games. And when they came out to E3 this year. So my agent and I kind of looked around as best we could and confirmed the credits that we could. And I think we came up with 261 confirmed credits. And I think now they've probably got close to 300, something like that, video games that I've been in. And so he was out here for E3. He was doing some other award ceremonies there anyway. And we ended up going to Nickelodeon. I was doing a session at Nickelodeon. I was working on Legend of Korra there at the time. And he presented the award to me in the lobby of Nickelodeon. It was pretty awesome. It was a very surprising thing. I never thought I'd qualify for anything like that in my life. I tried to get a Guinness record doing like spitting as far as I could when I was a little kid or hopscotch or something, you know, but I never thought that I would ever get an award for that. And it was a huge surprise and a pretty happy one.
Oh yeah. That's definitely awesome.
That is great. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got,
well, I know, oh, sorry. I was going to say I'm an avid gamer and whenever I hear your voice on a video game, it's like, oh, that's Steve Bloom.
Totally. I hope it's think that. Distracting for you.
No, yeah, I love it. I really do. Because I love it when I pick up on voice actors that I recognize.
Oh, cool.
It's like, you're very recognizable.
I hope that's a good thing.
It is, yeah. In fact, we just picked your name, I should say, picked up your voice in Toonami.
Yeah,
now that, now that Tom is back. Only what can Toonami. You tell us about that?
That was a really happy surprise, too. I've been working with the guys in Atlanta for many years doing other things, even after Toonami went off the air. We had done a few little bumps and commercial spots and things unrelated to Toonami, but still with that little modicum of snark that Tom had built. And they gave me a call, I think it was about February or March of this year, and they had asked if I would be interested in doing a little April Fool's surprise for the fans. And just as sort of a love letter to the fans, it was sort of held the Toonami flag up. There were a couple of websites like Toonami Aftermath and Neo Toonami who sort of kept that Toonami vibe alive for the next generation. And just sort of as an homage to them and just to see if there was any interest in the general public of bringing something like Toonami back onto the air, they decided to do this little gift for the fans on April Fool's, and they took over Adult Swim for the night and brought on a bunch of the old programming, and we did some bumps that were new bumps, but very much in the old style. And they used the Tom 3.0 version, stuck them on the air, and the viewership went from about 200,000 people for normal viewing on a Saturday night on Adult Swim to 1.4 million. Wow. And so it pricked up some people's ears and eyes, and the fans got really excited. They didn't know what to make of it. They thought it was a cruel trick to sort of bring back their childhood for one night and then dump them. But we decided that I told the fans that if they really wanted to get something like this back on the air, it was kind of up to them. And they really had to show their support for it so that they could justify putting this block of programming back on the air. And, you know, everything in programming on a network takes dollars, mm-hmm. which they did not have and still don't have. But the fan response was so overwhelming, and I joined in. I was just excited to see that people were interested, and so I joined in on these Twitter wars. We established these Twitter wars on Saturday nights, and so starting at around 10 o'clock or so, people would just sign on. We'd get a hashtag, like, bring back Toonami, and hundreds of thousands of people responded all over the world. It was insane, and every Saturday night, we'd spike, we'd trend. It was crazy, and we did that for weeks. Until finally Cartoon Network called and said, all right, if you're ready to come back on the air, we haven't got a lot of money, but you know, if you're willing to work within our budget and bring this thing back, we want to go full steam ahead. And I said, absolutely. Anything that I have to do to get this happening again, it's the response that I've received from the fans worldwide has just been overwhelming. And to bring this to a whole new generation of fans and to bring it back for the older fans too, is just it warms every cockle of my heart.
Very cool. Very cool.
Before we transition into Transformers Prime stuff, I was looking at your IMDb, and you are credited as the squeaky voice of SpongeBob.
I don't think that's correct.
Okay.
There are
I just wanted to make sure.
No, nobody can squeak better than Tom Kenny. And yes. And I have squeaked him many times. So no, nobody can do that better than Tom Kenny. I wouldn't even try. There are a few little errors on IMDb. It's not perfect.
Yeah, no one though. The internet is not perfect. So.
Yeah.
All right, getting into the Prime stuff. Take it away, Megatron.
Did you audition for any other roles besides Starscream?
Yes, I did, and I don't remember what roles I auditioned for. I think I auditioned for the role of Megatron and Optimus, and pretty much when I get auditions in, they usually give them to me in a lump. And whether I'm qualified for it or not, I'll audition for everything. And then after the fact, if there's any interest at all, then I sort of pick up the pieces and figure out what I'm going to do. That was kind of a weird one, though, because when I did get the call to book Starscream, I really wasn't expecting it, first of all. And secondly, the guy who had played Starscream most recently in the movies, Charlie Adler, is a dear friend of mine. And I thought his performance was just unsurpassed. It was brilliant. And I felt guilty. I couldn't take on the role without getting his permission for it. And I wanted to make sure that he got his shot and whatever. And he was so great. Charlie said that there were several reasons why he couldn't take the job and go ahead with it and make $1 million. I mean, Charlie's a classy guy, and he just gave me his blessing, and that was good enough for me.
Awesome. So how did you settle on the dark, conniving voice that Starscream? Like, what was your process? Walk us through, like, because, you know, we know you're Wolverine, and you have two different variations on your Wolverine voice mm-hmm. between Superhero Squad and Wolverine and the X-Men, but, like, how did you perfect your Starscream?
Well, nothing's perfect. I don't know. I knew, of course, about Chris Latta and his incarnation of him, and they said they definitely wanted to go with something a little bit darker than what he had portrayed. It was a different model for him. I hadn't seen the drawings at the time, but they said they really wanted him to sound like he could seriously do some damage, and they wanted to modernize it a little bit. And I had heard Charlie Adler's version. I had heard Tom Kenny's version in... what was it?
Animated,
yeah. Yeah. And I loved it. I loved Tom's version of it, but that also wasn't dark enough for this. They really specifically wanted to do something a little darker, but they wanted a character that was capable of going to those highs that Chris Latta would find too, the craziness and the cowardice and all of that stuff. So I kind of had to find a happy mix of everything, and I started him really dark and kind of built from there.
Yeah.
And, I just basically listened to the direction that they gave me. The guys that created this show are so brilliant, and they knew exactly what they wanted. And I felt that they were pretty good in spelling that out in the sides that they were handing out to the actors. And so I just tried to give them what they wanted, and fortunately they agreed. So it worked out pretty well. But, even at the callbacks for the thing, they said, we kind of liked where you started out here, and, you know, we're going to play with it a little bit here and there. And really the only alteration from there is they'll say to get a little more flamboyant at times. And
I nearly traveled back in time in the 80s when I forget which episode it is in season one, but there's one episode. I think it's the one where Megatron and Starscream are trapped in the cave.
Oh.
And you're just freaking out.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me so much of the G1 Latta version. I was like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Well, and that was a love letter to Chris Latta, honestly.
Yeah.
Anytime we go there, I have him in the back of my mind, and I'm just grateful that he sort of set that standard. We can just play with it once in a while. But that is the direction I get every once in a while. The hands will go up. They'll give me like jazz hands in the studio, and that's my cue that I can kind of take it up a few notches.
That's kind of creepy.
It is, and it's really fun and cool at the same time. And there's so much playtime that happens behind the scenes that's one of the things I look forward to most. And it's funny because it's not just from the director. It's like they'll give all the representatives from Hasbro and the Hub are in the room sometimes on the other side of the glass. And I'll see like a wave of jazz hands go up when they're all ready for me to kind of kick it up. So it's pretty fun. We have a really good time with it.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. I'd like to change gears a little bit and talk about a show that's near and dear to my heart, Rescue Bots.
Love Rescue Bots.
It's a good show. My boy Aiden and I actually do a little thing on YouTube we call Roll to the Rescue Bots.
Oh, really?
That's me, yeah.
Oh, that's you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I didn't realize that was you.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the thing where you guys are, like, sitting on the couch and you're asking him questions about it?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, we hang out and we play with toys. It's a lot of fun.
That's the best thing about being a dad, dude.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so, yeah. He's so cute at this age.
That's great. That's
and
that's
the thing, yeah, the things he says is just insane. But
amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a little hard on the editing side, but you know, it's nice to get feedback afterwards.
Well, feedback from a kid is always going to be honest, so that's about the best feedback you can get. I love it. The harsher, the better. I started out in voiceover reading for little kids in preschool, and the feedback I got from those guys helped mold my career. It's amazing. No, that sucked, Mr. Bloom. Do it again. You know, it's that you don't get that from adults. They edit themselves. Steve, that was okay, but can we try it with a little more smile, maybe? And in the back of their mind, they're going, no, that sucks, Steve. Do it again. So I'd rather have it just flat out there. So thank you to Aiden and thank you to you for doing that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, my boys, well, both of my boys, Aiden and Gavin, really love Rescue Bots. How did that come about for you?
That kind of came about the normal way. I do most of my auditions from home. I have a home studio and I just upload them to my agency and she sends them out to the powers that be and they mull them over. And so I read for 6 or 7 characters on the show, got a call back, went to the hub and read for those guys and booked it. It was just a happy surprise like every other gig is when I book it. It's, you know, I kind of leave it the audition laying there and I kind of go on to the next thing. I was taught that very early on in my career, the audition really is the job. And so when I booked it, it was just another happy surprise, just the icing on the cake.
Oh, cool. You may be one of the few performers that actually have 2 Transformers roles going on at the same time.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
In 2 different shows.
And one's an
exactly.
Autobot. One's an Autobot, one's a Nauticon, so.
The Nauticon. We're going to use that in the next show, Nauticon. Yeah.
Frank Welker.
Well, actually, yeah, there are no Nauticons in Rescue Bots, so.
No.
It's a little rough.
We're all good boys and girls. No, I'm probably
just evil volcanoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
I'm the oddest of the bunch just because I have a bad attitude half the time. But and guys like Tim Curry come in and kind of mess things up for us once in a while. But yeah, the Autobots are.
Tim Curry's awesome. Yeah. God, as far as bad guys go, that's an awesome bad guy.
Yeah, talk about fanboy moments. When he was coming in, I kind of lost it. And my son came to a session that day and. We weren't scheduled to be working at the same time, so I actually it was probably the only episode of anything I've ever worked on that I showed up 2 hours early so I could watch him. And
wow.
God, he's just amazing. Just amazing.
Wow.
That's such an incredible element to the show also.
So speaking of bad guys, I have to say I like your Starscream better than the Heatwave, but only because I dig bad guys.
Yeah, well.
Do you like playing a good guy better or a bad guy?
I love them all, really, because I feel like they all represent a different part of my psyche. The bad guys are kind of fun just because I can't go out there and be that nasty to people in the real world without getting in trouble. So, you know, that's always – it always has that sort of satisfaction for me. I can get rid of a lot of stress playing bad guys. But it's I started out, like I said, reading to kids and wanting to do things in the industry to actually educate and help people move forward in their lives. So when I do get to play a good guy, it's kind of nice to be a good influence once in a while too. I don't want to always be causing people pain and stress and yeah, hate.
So just for fun, real quick, if Starscream were to meet Heatwave, what would they say to each other?
Who are you and why are you on my ship? Well, I don't know. I was invited here. I understand there's an emergency. We can handle any emergency. And we don't need Autobots. Well, I found this T-Cog and I thought you... Oh, well, come on in. Let's talk, shall we? Don't tell Megatron.
That is so fucking awesome.
They're kind of in the same vocal wheelhouse there. When I put them together, it's kind of weird.
Heatwave is...
It's still a different tone.
It's a very different tone. Heatwave is kind of like a soft Wolverine, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Kinder, gentler.
More robotic.
Yeah, but still cranky. He's got a little bit of that cranky Wolverine edge to him, so it's kind of fun.
The cranky bot.
Yeah, he's a crank bot, yeah, and the other one's a naughty con, so.
Man, all right. Let's get into some behind-the-scenes stuff, Steve.
Okay.
Are there any crazy off-the-wall behind-the-scenes moments you can tell us about from Transformers Prime or Rescue Bots?
Well, Transformers Prime, it's just the most amazing alchemy of performers in that room, starting with Peter Cullen and Frank Welker, who are heroes and legends in their own right. And every now and then, those two will go off on their own little comedy routine. And they've known each other for so long, they really could just take it on the road. They ad-lib this stuff, and it's just drop-dead perfect and hilarious. Peter, a few weeks ago, started into a Broderick Crawford impersonation. And Frank picked up on it, and he was doing, I don't know what Frank was doing, but they were just going back and forth, and they basically did a on-the-fly comedy routine. So, and it was so funny to the point that they actually shut down recording. We just sat there and listened until they were done. It was incredible. It was just incredible. And we've got Darren Norris on the show, who's hysterical, and Nolan North, who's ridiculously funny, and Kevin Michael Richardson, who's usually the major cause of most disruption in our sections. He's just ridiculously funny, and has several of his own characters that he does behind the scenes that I probably shouldn't mention what they are, but
We are an explicit podcast over here, so if you can, if you want to, if you feel like you should.
Have you had him on the show yet?
Not yet.
All right.
We're waiting until we actually start our Transformers Prime review show.
Okay.
Because we're waiting for the show to get a few more seasons under its belt, but no, we haven't had him yet, but we will soon, I assume.
All right, so I don't spoil it, ask him about Escalade. Escalade is a friend near and dear to his heart, and Escalade makes a visit into our room every now and then. So make sure you ask him about that. He'll know what it is when you talk to him. The other thing that he does is this takeoff on an old show called My Three Sons, where he plays, he does it all by himself. He'll just do it spontaneously out of nowhere, and he'll become Uncle Charlie, who's basically... this old curmudgeon sitting in his chair barking at his nephew to come and bring him his douchebag and whatever else he needs it to function. And so Kevin, just in the middle of recording, he'll go, Steve, bring me my condoms. I need a rubber right now. You know, something like that.
Well, Charlie, I think that's kind of an inappropriate thing to talk about. And at your age, I don't think that's something that you really need.
Steve, I need to fill it up. My blood is like a goddamn pickle jar. he'll do things like that as we're trying to record these intimate moments between RC and the kids, you know, and we just die laughing. The other thing that happens in there is sometimes Darren Norris, I was recording some crazy scene where it was one of Starscream's kind of broken down moments, and it was actually kind of a quiet thing where he gets you know, a little bit emotional. And Darren is standing next to me, plays Knockout, and he had shoved a half of a stick of string cheese up each nostril, and he's swinging his head back and forth in front of me while I'm trying to deliver these lines. And, talk about mood breaker, but being the professional that I am, I carried forth, and we were able to finish it up. But afterwards, I almost threw up laughing so hard. It's that kind of stuff goes on in those sessions all the time.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And that happens in Rescue Bots also. It's a filthy bunch of wackos in there, that kind of stuff happens all the time. It's really something to behold. In Rescue Bots, I would say probably the most memorable thing to happen to me was I was doing some creature voice. I don't remember what it was, some dinosaur sound or something. And Maurice LaMarche came across the room, and he was standing in front of my microphone. He was staring at me. I said, "Mo, what's going on?" And the director was going, "Mo, what's going on?" And he goes, I just have to see how you get that sound out of your throat." And he's looking to see how I do something. This is Maurice freaking LaMarche. And I just stood there like a little kid, and I go, "Mo, you're actually interested in something that I'm doing." And I was so honored and flattered. And the director goes, "Okay, that's great, Mo. Sit down. Let him work." And Ginny tries to keep the room flowing there, Ginny McSwain. And you know, she runs a very tight ship there. But I was just so honored that Mo really cared that I caught his attention like that. And it's one of the highlights of my whole career, I think.
Awesome. So,
oh,
yeah, pretty cool.
So switching gears into the next topic, who were some of the other voice actors that influenced you?
Oh, man. Well, early on, of course, Mel Blanc, like everybody, and Dawes Butler and all the old greats, June Foray. But more recently, once I realized that I was a voice actor, which took me several years of doing it to actually realize that I was in the business, a friend had to point that out to me. Probably Frank Welker was the most influential person in my whole career, only because he did every creature voice in every Disney film I had ever seen, and just the versatility as an actor with his impressions and his comedy and everything that he had done throughout his career. And then meeting him working on Scooby-Doo. I came in on What's New Scooby-Doo, and I came in as a guest star on that show. And walking into that room with Frank and Casey Kasem and Nick Cohn and this whole group of people who I'd been listening to for so long, I fanboyed out on Frank. I came across the room at break time, and I just said, "You know, Mr. Welker, I'm such a huge fan of your work, and I'm so excited to be working with you here, and I'm sorry to have this fanboy moment, but I just have to shake your hand and thank you for everything that you've done. You've just been a huge inspiration." And Frank actually gave me his phone number, and he said, "Look," he goes, "I know that you're fairly new in this community, and if you ever have any questions, I'm open, and, you know, I'd be happy to talk to you and help you in any way I can." And to get that kind of a response from somebody at his level that early in my career was something I'll never forget. I mean, there's a genuine, incredible human behind that voice, too. And I find that to be true over and over and over again in this industry. Rob Paulson's another one. I've become close with Rob recently. And
yes, very recently.
Recently. I mean, I've known Rob for a few years now, but I mean, we've been working together on a few shows, and then we just did this podcast. We did his Talkin' Tunes podcast, and Rob came over to my house, and we talked and had dinner together. And what an incredible, genuine human being, as well as being one of the most talented people on the planet. And the list goes on. I mean, you can name almost anybody in voiceover, and I would say very similar things about all of them. This community in particular is just a genuine, warm, amazingly talented community of friends. It's unlike anything else in the entertainment industry. So I'm just very lucky. I'm inspired every day by people I work with.
Very wow. To comment on something you said about Frank Welker, yeah, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Frank Welker is a national treasure.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, if this guy, he needs some sort of lifetime achievement award.
I can't. Amazing. He sure deserves it. I mean, more than anybody I can think of, and everybody in the voiceover industry will say so. Right. It's incredible. And Frank really is. He's a very private guy, and he just doesn't take himself seriously at all. He just does his job, and he's kind to everyone, and he goes home and goes about his business. And I have so much respect for that. Somebody is as huge as he is in the entertainment industry to still be that grounded. It's just amazing to me.
Right. Right.
Peter Cullen is like that too. I mean, just to me.
Peter is one of the humblest people I have ever seen. I've seen him in several different Transformers convention panels, and he is just like aghast at the fan response to him.
And astonishingly talented too.
Yeah, he is.
Just a warm heart, and he's so kind and so much fun to work with. He's like a little kid in the booth with us. He's amazing. He's just amazing.
Have you ever seen something in a script that you would refuse to say?
Usually it's only grammatical issues or, you know, in the case of like Wolverine, there's been a few incarnations of Wolverine where they might type something that's a little bit too formal for him to say, and I'll have to take out some of the G's from the INGs, that sort of thing, and rough them up a little bit. But usually the director will catch it before I even get my hands on it, or I'll ad lib a line or two and they'll keep that. That's kind of how that works. I never refuse to do anything. I'll always do it as written first because the writers have spent a lot of time on it. I have to respect that. But no, I never refuse to do anything. I always figure there's a reason for it. And if we can find that it was just a mistake, then we'll fix that.
Right. So if you have the job, then you say the words.
Yeah, absolutely.
But have you ever turned down a job because maybe you knew they were going to make you say words that you didn't agree with?
I only turned down one job in my whole career, and that was basically a job I was hired for. It was many, many years ago. It was for an anime, and I walked into the room. They wouldn't tell me what the project was. They just called it Project X, and they said it was adult content. And I don't have a problem with that. I'm certainly not a prude. But I walk into the room, and they say that I'm a monster with all these tentacles. So you can kind of imagine where it goes from there, and it went.
Yeah.
That within the first 10 minutes, I was playing this monster with, you know, 100 tentacles, raping a girl in schoolgirl clothes and with close-ups and cameras from the inside. And I when I realized what it was, I said, you know, I really don't want any part of this. And I said, with all due respect, I humbly bow out, and I ripped up my contract. I walked out of the room, and I didn't work on the project. And I told him, please take me off the slate. I won't work on anything like that. And I can't. I just can't in good conscience work on stuff like that. So, you know, I don't have any judgment for people that enjoy that kind of stuff, but I certainly don't want to promote it. So that's okay.
Good so, for you. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Transitioning away from that.
happy note.
Yeah. You've been to many of the fan conventions, so what are your thoughts on them?
That's been a process for me. I started out many years ago, like I said, in anime, and I went to a convention very, very early in my career in San Jose before dubbed Japanese animation was really acceptable to an American audience. And the wars between the subtitled fans and the dubbing fans were just at their beginning there, and the subtitlers outnumbered the dubbers, 100 to 1. And going into this convention, I went and did a panel with some of the guys from Streamline, and there were very few companies even doing that kind of work back then. And they threw things at me. They called me names. They issued death threats against me and my family for having the audacity to dub Japanese animation into English. They just thought that was blasphemy. And so I kind of decided not to go to conventions for a while, and I didn't go to conventions for almost 10 years. Until I was asked to do a convention. It might have been Anime Expo or one of those conventions local. And I thought, all right, well, I'm going to go to a convention. A friend of mine is producing the show, and they wanted some support. I don't remember what show it was. But I showed up, and the fans had really matured. And I found that, you know, it was just this sweet group of people, a huge society of people in cosplay that loved the dubbed animation. They loved what we did. They supported what we did. And there didn't seem to be that animosity anymore. And so it made me feel like, okay, I can come and hang out with the fans, and I really want to find out what's going on and what has gone on all these years. And after doing several of those conventions, I really got to like it. I really enjoyed speaking to the fans, and the stories that I would hear from them were transformational for me. The fans were telling me things like, you know, there were some guys that were stationed in Afghanistan, and they would witness horrible things during the day in the war. And they would come back to base after a grueling patrol, and they'd play one of the video games I was in, and it gave them some sense of sanity. And to hear stories like that, and to hear stories about autistic children whose mind opened up watching things like Digimon, and they started having conversations with their family when they were previously nonverbal, or guys who contacted me and said that they were suicidal at one time in their life, and watching one of the shows that I was in save their life. I mean, hearing that sort of thing makes me want to continue going to conventions. And so I go all over the world, and it just fills up my soul hearing impact that we've had while we thought we were just making stupid cartoons. So it's amazing. I just love meeting people from all over the world. And it's funny, I'm about to go to Australia. I'm going next week, And I've been there before, and to see people dressed in the same cosplay outfits from all the wonderful shows I've been able to work on, and they know the same lines, they behave the same way with their friends, but they just have a different accent. It's pretty awesome to see that community is worldwide. It's incredible.
I remember when I first saw Superhero Squad show, and I knew instantly, and I think it was because I had seen Wolverine and the X-Men before, but like your voice is unmistakable. it just is. And as soon as I heard the line of, "Hey, Wolvie."
Don't call me Wolvie!
As soon as I heard you say that, I was like, oh my god. Because if people haven't seen Superhero Squad, and if you haven't, what rock are you living under? It's not super deformed, but it's like super kiddified animation, and it's really cool. It is very cool, but just to see Wolverine in that version of Wolverine, it just made me laugh so much.
So uncomfortable for those Marvel characters. It's a really great mashup, but they also are very faithful to the what has come before that, and they'll throw in some little references and tidbits from the classic Marvel stuff. And those guys are very aware of what they're doing, and they're really bringing it to a much younger audience, and I think breaking them in a healthy way, a healthy, fun way, so that later on they'll go, well, oh, I didn't realize that Wolverine would actually stab Hulk in the back of the neck and draw blood. That's kind of cool, Dad. You didn't tell me that back then when I was watching Superhero Squad. But I loved it also because it's the first and probably only time Wolverine will actually get to say snicked. I mean, it's awesome. It's just awesome.
We have the first season on DVD, and the boys, both my boys, Aiden and Gavin, have seen each episode of season one at least 1,000 times.
Nice.
Yeah, I've got the first season in my iTunes, and I just, when I want a really good, like, modern cartoon laugh, that's what I go to.
No, that's great stuff.
That show was just amazing. It should have gotten a third season.
I know. Well, Tom Kenny alone, I mean, working with Tom on anything is amazing, but to hear him do those characters and half of what he does that makes it to the final show is ad-libbed. They'll just give him an idea and he'll go off for 20 minutes and it's all hysterical. He's just, he's a genius.
That's so amazing. All right, so to kind of wrap this up, would you like to inform the fans of where they can interact with you online if you care to give that out?
Yes. Well, I have a website. It's stevebloomvoices.com. And I'm also on Twitter. At Bloomspew. It's spelled BLUMSPEW. And if you forget that is on my website. You can just Google my name and my website comes up. And I do answer as much email as I possibly can. And I'm pretty good on Twitter. And if I don't answer you personally, it's just because I'm busy and I'll try to, find the most commonly requested questions and things and try to answer that way. And I do answer my fan mail and I sign autographs through the mail if you send self-addressed stamped envelopes, and all that information is available on my website, too.
Awesome.
And my upcoming appearances are on there, too.
Yeah. What do you have coming up, just so people know? So, I mean, obviously, we'll put the website in the show notes, but what do you got coming up for appearances?
I'm going to look that up as we speak, because I have a manager who books all this stuff for me, so I just show up. She tells me, like, a couple weeks before. Well, the next thing I'm doing is, in a couple weeks, it's in Sydney, Australia. Mm-hmm. I'll be at the Heroes and Villains Pop Culture Expo, and that's August 25th and 26th in Penrith. Awesome. Then I'll be at Anime NebraskaCon, which is Omaha, Nebraska, November 2nd through 4th. And then at SACCON in Sacramento, December 9th. I think that's a one-day-only con. And there are going to be other ones that come up between now and then, and I will post them on my website. So if you just check out my website, I update my website every couple of weeks.
Very cool.
We would love to see you in Chicago.
Oh, I've been to Chicago before. I love that convention there. It's great, so hopefully I'll make it back there sometime soon. They've got a lot of great shows there, actually. So,
yeah, crossing the fingers.
Yep, I hope so. I love that town.
And pulling a trick out of the Talking Tunes bag, we would like to thank Mr. Blum for taking the time to chat with us here in this All Things Transformers interview. We will ask you to hold the line, and we'll be back after this.
All right, take care. Peace.
Starscream here, and I am the Lord and Master of the Geekcast Radio Network. Don't tell Megatron. Hey, bub, I keep telling you, don't call me Wobby! Snicked.
Predictable, Master. Is that what you called me? Well, now, who has hit rock bottom? What's that? I'm sorry. I can't hear you beneath all that rubble. Farewell, Lord Megatron. May you rest in peace. But you have survived far worse. If you managed to free yourself, you would blame me for your setback. And there is nowhere that I could possibly escape from your wrath. Or worse yet, your mindless followers will come looking for you and take credit for your rescue. Credit that could rightfully be mine! Ah! Megatron!
That was freaking awesome, and holy crap, tentacle porn. That's not cool.
I caught that reference and I knew Michael was thinking the same thing.
I knew exactly.
I was like,
I was trying so hard not to break down in the giggles.
Are you?
I almost was like, and it comes full circle.
It's all Michael Wilson's fault, really.
I know. That's why I started laughing when he said,
I was about to crack open a big bottle of tentacle grape.
Oh, yeah. And he says, and 100 tentacles came out, and I just lost it.
So there you go, folks. That was the interview with Steve Blum. My God.
Blum.
Rob Paulson. Steve Blum. Not Blum. Blum. That was the interview with Steve Blum here on All Things Transformers. I was going to have him and Megatron do something. I kind of forgot at the end there, but
it's all right. There's always next time.
Yeah, there's always next time, because we will most definitely have him back.
Shoot, maybe by the time we're actually doing that podcast, I might be doing voiceovers, so who knows.
Hey, you never know. So there you go. Megatron, you want to close the show?
Not really. I'm grinning ear to ear, so it's kind of hard to do the voice.
All right, so for All Things Transformers, I am TFG and Mike with Steve Grinning Megatron and Pecan Court Michael. We will catch you at some point, because I've got ideas for ATTF episodes, so I had to talk to Steve about those off air. So,
I'm actually editing the fourth episode of Roll to the Rescue Bots, so that
very
should be
awesome.
Soon, too.
And you should have thy promo.
Yes.
Well, that might have to wait for the fifth episode, because the fourth episode is jam-packed full of awesome already.
Nevertheless,
All right, then. We will see you next time.
See you later.
I love when a plan comes together.